Okay, so Biden's out by the weekend, according to Democratic insiders. It's pretty much game over at this point, if not by this weekend, very soon, shortly thereafter. He has an out now. It's COVID, not his languishing mental faculties, rather his physical ineptness to fulfill the tasks of the role. Now, we have some bigger fish to fry on the geopolitical scene that we need to talk about, and I want you to put yourself in your 2022 brain, because any one of the following headlines that I rattle off today should garner millions and millions of eyeballs 2 years ago when we weren't desensitized to all this stuff. But this is a testament to how far we've actually fallen. Okay, so get a load of this. We have the Russians getting ready to deploy more intermediate nuclear weapons to regions of Moscow, Leningrad, and Kaliningrad. They already have them in Kaliningrad since 2016. Those are Iskander-capable missiles, and this is why Germany is inviting the United States to bring in their nuclear-capable Tomahawk missiles, which of course will be in violation of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, which has now basically been unilaterally rejected by the United States in 2019 by Donald Trump, the guy who's supposed to prevent World War III. More on that in just a moment. We have NATO flying RC-135 Rivet Joint and P-8 Poseidon recon aircraft currently operating in and around Russia's borders on a daily basis. This is occurring while we have a high-intensity conflict in Ukraine. Again, that alone would have been a major earth-shattering headline just a couple of years ago. However, this day and age, these things fall on deaf ears. We have the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty head, Anton Mazur of Russia, saying that NATO is preparing for a war with Russia that includes increasing the number of armed forces, the number of weapons, their deployment to the east, development of corridors, increasing military production, developing military transport infrastructure, building strategic reserves, dehumanizing Russians through propaganda, and even building prisoner of war camps. Okay? Now, all of that, remember that 2 years ago, nobody was talking about a war between Russia and NATO. People were implying it, but there was no explicit talk. Now we find ourselves in an inextricable bind with the Russians that appears to be rolling faster and faster downhill, which is probably why this headline here, "Hungary believes intensity of the conflict in Ukraine will soon escalate radically," he says, beyond what we've already seen. Poland moving 17,000 troops to the Belarusian border. Poland will be launching a new operation involving 17,000 troops with Belarus. The Polish Armed Forces 18th Mechanized Division will be in charge of the operation. We've seen the biggest NATO exercises in history taking place just in the past year alone, and that continues on an ongoing basis, and those exercises just don't seem to end. Now, with respect to Joe Biden, indeed, Kamala Harris does appear to be leading in the polls, okay? So it appears as though now, since that poor showing, or since, I guess, the Trump assassination attempt, Kamala Harris has been trending much higher than Joe Biden. Back when the debate performance, Kamala Harris was starting to bypass Biden in terms of people's belief that he was going to win the election. Now that is back up with Kamala Harris once again. Biden polling at 22%. She's polling at around 66%. So this is an open source. This is not an official poll, I should say. So something to keep in mind. But it appears as though all things indicate that the Obamas, the Schumers, the Clintons, everybody's now coming out and saying, I think it's like two-thirds of Democrats and 3 in 10 don't feel confident that he can serve effectively. So it's pretty much just a matter of time. He's supposed to be coming out with a big announcement in the next few days. I would not be surprised, however, if he came out and said, "I'm still in this race till the bitter end." But more and more, the voices are getting louder. They've postponed the, what do you call it, the nomination vote, and that's going to not take place until early August now. It was supposed to take place next week. So right now we're in what a friend of mine calls the horse trading phase. You'll notice a seeming detente and hostilities on the strategic end of things between the Russians and the Americans, and that's because everybody, we're in an election phase, okay? And everybody, before they make any major moves that are going to require massive commitments and have severe repercussions, before they commit to that, they want to see what sort of front man they're going to be dealing with, okay? We're going to talk about Trump and Zhirinovsky's predictions in more depth in just a moment. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just wait, you'll see. Now, we also have to talk about Ukraine having NATO deploy F-16s, forward deploy them to countries like Bulgaria, Romania, and Poland. This is going to be done under the guise of exercises, but in reality, what's going to be happening is Ukraine is going to be having these planes fly sorties on their behalf, likely with NATO pilots, okay? So they are calling for sanctuary bases for F-16s to fly from. This is the new scheme being talked about in the inner circles. It's an idea that you would have that the planes would not fly from said countries, but imagine it as a consulate of sorts or a embassy where it's sovereign territory within the territory of another country. Therefore, a missile has to fly over Poland to enter into this airbase, which has been deemed Ukrainian sanctuary territory, if you will. And that might be the scheme that they cook up, because of course that would mean that a missile would have to pass through Polish airspace. It would be shot down, and you know how that story plays out. Article 5 triggers nuclear Armageddon. Now, that's just one possibility, okay? That in of itself would have raised eyebrows 2 years ago to know that NATO was getting ready to put NATO pilots in NATO planes and getting ready to fly them towards territory that Russia considers their own, territory that Russia has annexed a few years ago, not, of course, recognized by the international community, at least some of it. Actually, I should say, let me walk that back. In terms of population, I think the majority of the Earth's population is either indifferent or supports Russia's annexation of the territory. However, the golden billion, as we refer to ourselves here in the West, we certainly don't support that. So I guess let's see where the chips fall. Zelensky is supporting a new maritime security strategy that is going to allow NATO warships closer to Ukraine. All the while, we're seeing massive attacks on the Crimean Peninsula with U.S. long-range ATACMS systems. They just took out another S-300. One of the final warships of Russia has departed Crimea. So they're starting to push the Russians back. And now NATO is coming into the Black Sea. They're already in the Black Sea because you have Bulgaria and Romania in the Black Sea as well. But now Ukraine is going to be welcoming them closer to their country. So, of course, this is going to be a security issue for Russia. And Russia has said that this is going to be responded to in their usual diplomatic soft fashion without indicating any clear red lines. But they do claim that it is a violation of the 1936 Montreux Convention, which regulates the passage of military naval ships into the Black Sea. And that, of course, is controlled by the Bosphorus Strait in Turkey. Okay. Now, I just want to show you something here, because I know some of you guys got squirrel brain. I'm right there with you. This is a publication, Russian media, who's talking about what a nuclear war would look like if they, let me just turn this down here, particularly with emphasis on Kaliningrad, using these intermediate range missile systems. Okay, so they're talking about putting these missile systems in Leningrad, Moscow, as well as more in Kaliningrad. And what this is going to do, of course, is cause another arms race, another arms buildup. So we're essentially in, I would say, not the beginning, because unlike the Cold War, we're in a new Cold War, obviously, but unlike the Cold War, there wasn't a hot, high-intensity modern war currently underway at the time. And I think you had a better balance of power back then as well. And when you have that balance of power, that can actually prevent the situation from escalating, because both sides have parity in terms of their nuclear capabilities and their conventional capabilities. And as such, that prevents the possibility that people are going to do things in haste, because both sides are aware that the stakes are very high and it's not going to be an easy fight. right now, NATO may be tempted with the Russians, who they at least say openly in public that Russia doesn't have the capabilities to continue to wage a war of this magnitude. They're saying that there's a possibility that they can win this thing without it going nuclear. Of course, all the experts disagree. Now, I'm just getting some messages here. Let me just check those messages because it looks like there's a situation developing in Tel Aviv right now. It looks as though there was an explosion, a car bomb that was detonated, and not really sure who was involved in that yet, if it was a high-profile assassination, if it was a flashbulb event. There's a lot of activity right now on the Lebanese border and a lot of military rhetoric currently underway between those two countries. The United States has said that they don't think that a war with Lebanon is imminent, but that could serve two possible purposes, okay? The two purposes that could serve is, number one, that is going to be for the purpose of basically causing confusion amongst Hezbollah and hopefully trying to reassure them that there is not going to be a military incursion in the north by the Israelis. But it also absolves them of responsibility and disconnects them from something. If something were to happen, then they can say, well, we didn't know. We had no intelligence of this, that this was going to happen. It must have just been something that Israel did independently, and thus we can't have any responsibility for it. So we had a major Israeli strike on Lebanon recently, two big assassinations as well as civilian casualties. That, of course, has been considered a red line for Hezbollah. And again, you know, the U.S. is saying, well, we don't see any major sign of escalation, even though we're seeing record levels of rocket fire and cross-border exchanges on a daily basis. You now have Israel conscripting ultra-Orthodox Jewish people who are, for decades, if not generations, were immune from the draft due to their Orthodox theology. However, now, for the first time ever, they're going to be conscripting 3,000 of these guys on Sunday. And the only reason why you would do that is if you had manpower issues. Also, the Knesset passed a resolution that rejects the concept of a two-state solution, basically making it nearly impossible now for there to ever be any sort of resolution on this particular issue. We also, let me thumb through the information here. I'm just jumping around the map today. This guy here, Ben-Gavir, decided to make some very provocative statements in front of the Dome of the Rock. And of course, you know, there's long has been this idea, it's a religious idea, that once the Al-Aqsa Mosque was destroyed, that they would rebuild Solomon's Temple, and that would unleash a war that would ravage the Middle East and possibly eventually lead to World War III or act as an accelerant for it. So the fact that he is giving this rant, and this is the guy who is advocating for not only nuking Iran, but also nuking Gaza, the fact that he is giving this rant is for the purpose of trying to provoke a significant enough response that would give the Israelis the license that they need to go to war, and then that would bring the Americans in, because right now they need the Americans in there if they're going to fight this war. Israel cannot fight a war in the Middle East on their own because they know it's going to spill over their border. So what they have to do is have some sort of big event that is going to say, look, we were attacked, now we need your support. Of course, they know that they're going to have the unwavering support of the Americans, especially around election season. The stakes are going to be high, so there's going to be a lot of sycophants in the next couple months pandering to the Israeli lobby. And I think that's why they're ramping it up right now. They're trying to see, you know, who is going to have their back more, what sort of deal they can get with the Biden administration versus the Trump administration. The IDF chief apparently has presented an invasion plan to U.S. CENTCOM Commander Kirilov, and convinced they are convinced that Iran is developing nuclear weapons, and that Hezbollah is heavily related to what happens in Iran, that Iran is orchestrating a lot of this activity. So what happens in Lebanon will definitely spill over into Iran. Israel's preconditions for Hezbollah basically have made negotiations impossible. They're saying now, according to Gallant, I believe that he's their defense chief, if Hezbollah wants to reach an agreement with us and reach a situation where it withdraws from the borderline to the areas beyond the Litani River as stipulated by the UN resolution. So basically they want Hezbollah to retreat further into their own territory, which is never going to happen, which makes war there inevitable. It's just a matter of time. Remember, many countries have put in level 4 travel advisories and canceled flights to that region until the end of July. I have a sneaking suspicion that that indeed will be postponed. However, we're not seeing the massive spike in oil that we have anticipated. And perhaps that is because people are waiting on this political thing to play out to see exactly where the money is going to get put first, where the attention is going to be. Is it going to be to the globalist peer-to-peer conflict with Russia and China, or is it going to be the jingoists who go all in on the colonial escapades of Israel in that region and continue to imperialize the Middle East? It appears as though that's the point of view that is currently winning. Now, to go back to the Russian front for just a moment here, what did I miss? I'm sure I missed a hell of a lot. Okay, so in terms of what's happening, in terms of the NATO-European front, basically, oil supply, so you're seeing this massive decoupling happening, okay? So there's a pipeline, if you didn't know, that runs through Ukraine that is still operational, believe it or not. Okay, and I guess it's because, you know, the Ukrainians, they get transit fees, right? So it just shows you how much of a racket war is, that they're still willing to do business with the Russians, even in the thick of this major war, which tells you that, you know, ultimately, it's very likely that the situation is going to be resolved as such that Ukraine is going to retain the West and the rest is probably going to go to Russia. But anyway, so essentially what's happening here is that the Hungarians and the Slovakians are now going to be deprived of Russian oil via this pipeline. I think this is an attempt to provoke Orban and Fico and possibly get them out of NATO, definitely get them out of the seat of administrating the European Union. And you know, this is just going to, of course, in response to Orban's attempts to try to broker some sort of peace deal. Now, this could potentially backfire. This is definitely escalatory. This is not de-escalatory by a long shot. In addition to that decoupling, we have the Baltic states who are going to be separating from the Belarusian and Russian power grids, which is really shooting themselves in the foot. They're also going to be continuing to ban Belarusian vehicles. And as you probably know, many of the border crossings are now heavily regulated, if not outright closed altogether. So that's the situation on that particular front. In a nutshell, we also have Ursula von der Leyen, who's been reelected. She says that she's going to create an EU defensive alliance. Now, the European Union, as far as I know, is more of a political and economic union, and now it is transforming into a military alliance, much like NATO. So it's almost taking the reins of NATO. And the interesting thing proposed about this alliance is that it's going to create a European defense union, which aims to give control over the defense industry in European nations from their governments to the European Commission. So national sovereignty of individual countries involved is, of course, going to be called into question and be under the governance of the EU. I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of people are not going to like that too much, okay? Now, where should we go next? We've covered Europe. We've covered Russia, Ukraine. We've pretty much covered the Biden situation. We've covered the nuclear situation. We've covered the Middle East. Have we talked about Asia? Okay, so what's going on in Asia is that China has called off arms control talks with the U.S. There is no nuclear treaties. Jesus, I'm just getting all kinds of messages right now. Okay, let's quiet that down just a little bit. Okay, so let me close this application here. All right. So essentially, the Chinese don't have any nuclear treaties with the West. They were, in December of 2023, in preliminary talks to try to devise some sort of, at least initiate the conversation. Because, of course, if the Chinese have no nuclear treaty, then they're not bound to any sort of agreement, as de facto as it may be now with the Russians and the United States, as most of the nuclear treaties have basically been withdrawn from by both sides. China has basically a free rein to develop as many nuclear weapons as they want, and they do so in secret. They disclose only what they want to disclose, and all the U.S. estimates about how many nuclear weapons China has are based on those very limited disclosures. For all we know, they could have 5,000 nuclear weapons. I'm sure you could trace, determine, you know, where they're getting nuclear materials, and you could probably make some fairly accurate estimates. The experts probably could, but at the end of the day, we don't know what goes on in the Chinese underground. We can only speculate. Anyways, they've suspended those talks now in response to Taiwan continuing to get weapons. And we know that that is only going to ramp up under Trump, especially now with his new Vice President Vance, who is probably among one of the most hardline Chinese, anti-Chinese, pro-Taiwanese candidates. Trump is also saying that he's going to put 60 to 100% tariffs on China, which of course ultimately would affect people massively and cause massive inflation in the everyday products, the 90% of things that you spend your money on when you go to any big box store. Now, that might be great in the long term in terms of spurring on domestic manufacturing and industrial production. However, in the short run, especially through one of the darkest times, where what will be one of the darkest times in American economic history that's coming due to the incredible amounts of insurmountable debt that we are currently bearing, not only in the United States, but all Western countries, it is going to be incredibly difficult, and most people aren't going to know what to do. In an already hyperinflationary environment on many metrics, we are going to see that inflation skyrocket in price before it gets better. He's also claiming, conversely, that the Taiwanese stole their business. In fact, that the TSMC, the Taiwanese, the biggest chip manufacturing facility in the world that makes the most advanced chips in the world, and remember, that's what this whole war is about. It's the only reason why the U.S. cares about Taiwan at all, is because they have the facilities to make the most sophisticated chips, and these are not facilities that you can just build overnight or in a decade for that matter. It could take several decades to catch up to the Taiwanese, unless there was some Manhattan Project-like effort in order to try to catch up. But he is now saying that, accusing them of stealing their business, and of course insisting that they need to contribute more to their own military defense, at the same time threatening the Chinese. So it's going to be interesting to see how that situation develops. According to Japan, a Japanese government report has suggested that China could land troops in Taiwan within a week if it decided to commit to an invasion, that it has the manpower and materiel to do so. They're highlighting China's improved capacity for rapid assault. The report indicates that China may use a naval blockade, bombardment, amphibious assault, and cyber attacks in a swift and coordinated strategy, and that they basically take Taipei in a matter of days. Now, we've heard this before. This could actually be setting the stage to falsely implant the idea that the Chinese made the claim that they're going to be able to take Taiwan quickly. I don't think the Chinese have said anything about their plans to militarily take Taiwan. But in the same way that it was framed that the Russians claimed that they were going to take Kiev in 3 days, something that they never said, or at least no official said, certainly not Vladimir Putin. There might have been some political pundits who made an offhanded remark with respect to that. But this was a falsehood which was perpetuated by the Western media. Putin himself never thought that it would only take 3 days to get to Kiev. In fact, it almost would have had NATO not intervened in the way that they did. There was a massive blackout in Bangladesh, and it looked like something out of World War Z. Oh, that's not World War Z. That is the... Okay, so this is the internet. So there's an internet kill switch in numerous countries, and this is something people should be mindful of if and when martial law gets imposed. Even though the United States doesn't have an official internet kill switch as some countries do, there are ways that they could shut down the internet relatively easily if they wanted to, even if it just meant faking a cyber attack that took down the internet. So that is definitely something that could happen. Now, right now, there are thousands of people rioting in Bangladesh, and I believe it's due to an issue of government. I mean, look at these scenes, just thousands of people rioting in the streets. And this is just something we're going to continue to see ramp up. I mean, this looks like something out of a scene of Judge Dredd. The higher the prices of food, the more it's going to affect developing countries, and the more you're going to see these types of riots and then color revolutions and just all kinds of social chaos, and we're only at the beginning of that. We're not even close to where, you know, things were in 2008 in terms of the bread riots and stuff like that. Right now in the UK, they're currently supposedly protesting the government taking kids or something like that. This looks like a very predominantly immigrant neighborhood, obviously. And this is, of course, stirring up the conversation about immigration within the UK as these riots are targeting police vehicles, as well as I think a business who was claimed to be working with the government to collect people's children for social services department or something like that. But this seems like one of those situations where perhaps, you know, the impetus to riot may have been justified. Of course, it's never justified to riot because it always has the opposite effect. But the impetus to protest may have been justified. But of course, there's those opportunistic people who are going to take advantage of the situation and just want to bring chaos to the neighborhood. And so the neighborhood's getting burned down. Isn't that great? In Ukraine, this is interesting. She's talking about, okay, so according to her, this is genocide, okay? Let's hear what she has to say. So this is a Ukrainian woman who looks incredibly hot, and not in a physical sense, but maybe a little bit. And but I'm talking about the heat, because right now Ukraine is in a heat wave, okay? So they don't have air conditioning. So to them, that is a genocide. So let's see what she has to say. So, I have no electricity for 26 hours. I'm sitting in the car trying to charge EcoFlow power bank. Oh, hey, EcoFlow gets a pitch there. Isn't that interesting? When prepping meets real world. And it looks like she's got something in her nose there. I guess there's not a scarcity of everything. She's trying to cool down with air conditioning from last night. Since 7 p.m., we simply don't have electricity. Fucking everything is discharged. Everything that could discharge is already discharged. What I want to tell you, this is a fucking genocide, can't call it differently. There is no connection, no light or internet. And I'm not making fun of this situation, by the way. It sucks that you're in a war zone, but that's not genocide. Okay, let's just be honest, compared to what's going on in the Gaza Strip. All right, so, you know, something to keep in mind. What else do we got to talk about here? Okay, so this, like, Tesla stock will surge tenfold on robo-taxis. ARK Invest, Kathy Wood has said. Now, think about what would have to happen here. Robo-taxis. How many people would not have to own vehicles in order for that to happen? For there to be a tenfold in people riding vehicles that don't belong to them. And this is my problem with Tony Stark, also known as Elon Musk, being championed as the renegade of free speech. is that he's ushering in all these things that the anti-WEF crowd rails against, like owning nothing, owning no vehicle, and being happy. Well, I mean, this is textbook that. This is you won't have a car because you won't need it, because you'll just take a robo-taxi everywhere, and it'll probably be really cheap because they're not going to have to pay a guy to be in the vehicle. So it's going to be cheaper to own, just like much like nowadays how rent is cheaper to do than owning a place, right? So the premiums and the taxes and the interest on the mortgage so high that it's not even worth owning a place anymore, especially seeing as if you don't pay the taxes on it, the government is just going to take it, right? The bank's going to take it. So this is all par for the course. So I am not under any illusions about Elon Musk as the savior of mankind. Quite the opposite, in fact. Anyways, this is what the Russians are doing. They got some Mad Max stuff going on. I think this is going to be what we're all driving soon. This looks like an old, like, battering ram style tech. This looks like an anti-drone shield over its tanks. It's got all these spikes on it, and I suppose those spikes make sure that the drone can't get to a point where it can blow a hole into the side of this thing. So it's actually, that's where we're heading. We're right back, you know. I would have thought that electronic warfare, that they were making progress with that, they wouldn't have to do this more archaic method of stuff, but they still do. This is Tel Aviv right now. It was a car bomb explosion there, and clearly a message being sent from Hezbollah. What else do we got to talk about today? You know, I think the debt to GDP ratio has finally, it's almost past World War II, okay? Now the difference being that this was after World War II or in the peak of World War II, so we're not even technically in World War III yet, in that we're not at war with a peer. Of course, a lot of people think that would immediately mean nuclear weapons, but not necessarily. We are, however, in a high-intensity proxy conflict. Our debt-to-GDP ratio is already this high. Contrary to, you know, at this point in time, though, we were industrialized in that point in time. People had a lot more skills. People weren't little whiny bitches for the most part. And nowadays, we're in big, big trouble. And there was a much younger population then as well that could be exploited for their labor. Not anymore. I found this one interesting. This is an old post from Donald Trump. This was actually a post by Gavin Newsom. I can't believe I'm retweeting something that Gavin Newsom would say, because I think that guy is kind of a clown like our own prime minister. But it's interesting when he says that Donald Trump tweeted out, I'm not sure when Donald Trump tweeted this out, but I'm sure it was not too long ago when he was in office. When Elon Musk came to the White House asking me for help on all of his many subsidized products. See, that's the key there. All of this stuff is subsidized. Whether it's electric cars that don't drive long enough, well, that's debatable now. They're making headway there. Driverless cars that crash, they're also making headway there. And rocket ships to nowhere, I agree with that one, even though we know that all of this is for the military-industrial complex. The whole space-based warfare thing, that's what that's all about. Starlink, everything SpaceX, it's all going to be used for military purposes, as will be the Tesla Vision technology, which will be incorporated into military vehicles in a hot minute once it is perfected, which won't be long now. Without such subsidies, he'd be worthless, and telling me how he was a big Trump fan and a Republican. I could have said, drop to your knees and beg, and he would have done it. And of course, this is in reference to Elon's endorsement of Donald Trump. So I think it's an interesting love triangle that they have going on. Of course, Elon originally had all of his operations in California, moving them all to Texas. I guess they say if you're not a, what is that old saying? If you're not a liberal at 20, you got no heart. If you're not a conservative at 40, you got no brain. I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, but
maybe there's some truth to it. I'm sure there's associationship with, you know, conservatism and older age and liberalism in the youth. The youth just tend to be a more rebellious bunch of people. And that's just how it is. Let's talk about Zhirinovsky. I know I've talked about Zhirinovsky a lot, but I mean, this guy needs more attention. It's unfortunate that he died in April of 2022, because I would love to hear what this guy has to say now. He is probably one of the most clairvoyant individuals, which is not to say I agree with him politically whatsoever. However, he says some interesting things. One of the things he says, if Trump does something wrong, they will kill him like Kennedy, just like a crazy lunatic murdered him in some state. Okay, now just listen to that, what he just said. If Trump does something wrong, they will kill him like John Kennedy, just a crazy lunatic murdered him in some state. Right? So he basically just said, crazy lunatic murdered him in some state, and that's exactly what happened. But the reason why his predictions, and that's not really a hard prediction to make, you can say that's like astrology level of prediction, but what is interesting is that he did predict almost the exact date when the Ukrainian invasion was going to start. Now, he also said the following, which has already been proven true, because he's talking about Ukraine. He says, these were the last elections, the last. You won't have elections in 2024 because there won't be a country named Ukraine. Ding, ding, he was right about that. You're not considering the situation in the Middle East. Such events will unfold there that everyone will forget what Ukraine is. This is about World War III, and Iran is not Vietnam, North Korea, or Kosovo. The most terrible events will take place there, he said. We will be forced to allow refugees through to you. Europe will let them through to you, as will the Turks upon our request. They will all gather there, and your country will be finished. So that's their method, and this is why there's all of this stuff happening on the Belarusian borders with Poland and Belarus, because they're trying to, I guess, destabilize the EU by letting in a bunch of immigrants. Remember, the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians and the North Koreans and several African countries have a vested interest in destabilizing the United States. The more they can destabilize the United States, the worse off the dollar is going to be, the higher the price of gold is going to get, and the greater chance of BRICS' own financial system succeeding, and many endeavors of the Russians and the Chinese in terms of their repatriation of the Taiwan Strait and the Taiwan, the island of Taiwan, as well as the Russians' liberation as they see it. I'm not saying that it's that, but they view it as the liberation of the annexed territories. It's going to make that a lot easier if the U.S. is basically embroiled in infighting and can't basically commit to any sort of foreign policy initiative, because there's too much fighting going on. So indeed, the Russians and the Chinese have a lot to gain by assassination attempts and any level of unrest in any of these countries. It's just like how we were kind of celebrating, not myself personally, but how many people in the West were celebrating when Prigozhin was creating all that stir in Russia, when it seemed as though there could have been a civil war break out there. In the same way, that's how the Russians are viewing this. And they actually think that the American political system is currently on thin ice. The situation in Kiev is getting quite dire. A woman in Kiev has self-immolated in protest. There's a video that I'm not going to show, but she lit herself on fire. What was she protesting? She was protesting the forced mobilization of her husband, who I believe may have died on the front line. So people are starting to get fed up there. I've long since said that what could potentially happen if the United States backs out of Ukraine in the wrong way, it could actually backfire in that a lot of those people will feel betrayed by the West and may warm to the Russians. And I'm not saying it's going to be everybody, because there's some hardline ideological opposition to Russia there. But I'm just saying that it could happen, that the Russians could, you know, essentially be welcomed by several people there who have had enough of the Ukrainian government and the lack of elections and the imposition of martial law and the forced mobilization and the treatment of people on the streets by the commissars. It's it's possibility that we could see that unfold. Now, I'm going to check to see what these messages are all about. It must be important because my phone is getting lit up right now. If I got to make another video tonight, oh boy, I don't know if I can do it because I got so much stuff to do on the homestead. I'm going to have an insanely busy week, guys. If you want to support the channel, you know where to go, CanadianPreparedness.com for all of your preparedness needs now during this seeming lull in strategic hostilities between countries. I think it's the best possible opportunity for you to capitalize on that and gear up before the panic starts, because indeed there are so many different special interest groups that have a vested interest right now in creating chaos in order to push through their own agendas. Basically, everybody you can think of who is currently involved in these conflicts, be they independent groups, religious factions, nations, have vested interests in chaos ensuing. And if that chaos doesn't present itself, they might just make it happen on purpose, a classic false flag flashbulb event in order to push through whatever sort of agenda they need to ensure that they maintain power. So let's hope that things go well, but we got to pair our hope with prudent preparedness and remain vigilant at all times, because the sleeper cells could start to wake up at any moment now. Thanks for watching, my friends. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe if you enjoy the video. Canadian Prepper out.